we think we know that we're learning, but we don't really know that we're learning. And I think when we sort of look at learning sometimes as an illusion, it sort of opens our eyes to discover more. So question everything that you think you know.
Well, hey everyone, this is Scott, and thanks so much for downloading the latest episode of The Scott King Show, where I talk with sales and marketing leaders from all over the world on how they are building their brands and growing their businesses and building their brains. Today's episode features the learning pirate, Lauren Waldman. Lauren is revolutionizing organizational learning. She's a board-certified training and development professional. She's spoken all over the world, helping businesses and knowledge workers rediscover the power and the pleasure of learning. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. It's so amazing to be here.
And first of all, I'm not the first person to answer or ask this question, but the learning pirate, what's the learning pirate?
No, you're definitely not the first. The learning pirate is, so I've always had, I think, some whimsical, fantastical part to me. There's always that little child in me that never grew up, and it's taken me, I think that's what took me all around the world. So, ironically, I did wind up working on a cruise ship, and I was the training officer for a cruise ship, which kind of brought the pirate to life. But the pirate part of learning pirate is really just reminding people to tap into that little bit of whimsy and adventure that comes with learning.
Yeah. And then, you know, I've done a little bit of research on pirates, and, you know, they're pretty innovative, right? Because they had very few resources, but they were very hierarchical, which I don't think is good in a learning environment. Is that true, or am I making that up?
Oh no, there shouldn't be any hierarchy when it comes to learning, and that's why I'm not the learning captain.
It's just the learning pirate. Yeah, it's like you're forced to do it. So, I mean, you speak a lot about neuroscience in learning, and you know, we all try to pass around knowledge, but you know, you seem to have a different view on traditional learning. Right. So this neuroscience, it seems new to me, right? Because I was a traditional student, and now I'm trying to implement these other, you know, cognitive functions in neuroscience. Why is it different, and why now?
And that's a really great question. You know, when we look at the institution of learning, it's most likely, you know, what you said is we all went through a very similar experience when it came to school. What we didn't have the ability to do what we do have now, especially within the last 25 years, we've got the technology now to go into our brains, to see what's happening while we're doing specific cognitive tasks, and to monitor what that learning looks like and how it's happening. So whereas, you know, for centuries, we've been very interested in the brain, it's only up until recently that we've had the technology to really get in there and understand what's happening when we're learning. And now we can actually use that research to now translate it into practical methodologies that we can use, like for what I do in the workplace and for personal learning as well.
So when you say technology, I mean, do you literally like an MRI or some kind of imaging technology to see the brain under what stimuli? Like, what's the inputs and outputs?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So I think, you know, some of the talks that I do, I've got this wonderful image of the gentleman, Dr. Damadian, who was the one who created the first MRI. And if you look at this, it was in 1977. It's a beast of a machine back then. He kind of looks like the doctor who sort of created Frankenstein. But that was in 1977. Whereas if you fast forward, the first functioning MRI machine was in 1993. And that really wasn't too long ago when we think about it. And then when we think about the complexity of this organ that we're talking about, which literally is networks and networks and houses, you know, umpteens amounts of information, 25 years of being able to get into it is really not that much time when we think about it in terms of science.
Yeah, I mean, 25 years is a short time, right? Especially since I like that you called it an organ. I probably never would have done that. But, you know, the way we learn is, it seems to be completely different than the way we're taught. So if, you know, if we've had 25 years of MRI and we figure out, okay, maybe we learn a little bit differently than what we're doing, like, how long is that feedback loop going to take to fix the way we teach children or adults?
We're slowly getting there. And I think one of the biggest challenges, I'm incredibly fortunate that I do get to participate in research studies, and I get really, really great exposure to the scientists and the doctors. And one of the greatest challenges for them is not having sort of the translators and the middle people like myself to translate that science and to translate that research into the practical applications into our schools. Now, there are some school boards throughout the United States, in Canada as well, that are now trying to implement this research into the education system, but it's going to take a lot of time. When we look at the institution, institutionalized education, it's really been around for over 300 years. And if you were to Google, a classroom from even, the late 1800s, and then sort of split screen that against a classroom today, you're not going to see much difference. You can see sort of those blank looks that existed back then still sort of exist today. So we are sort of utilizing the research, and it's showing remarkable adaptability into the education system, but it is going to take time.
Yeah, I can imagine the only differences between those photos. One may be in color, right? One may be in black and white. But exactly. But there's this old photo. I don't know how true it is, and it shows like this big office with all these desks in neat columns and rows. And they said it just looks like people are computing, inside of one cell of a spreadsheet. And so it's very computational, right? And I'm thinking of a classroom, and it's kind of set up in that same way. I never really put that together, but some schools have, like the Montessori schools, do things a little bit differently, right? So maybe they're ahead of the curve. Or are you familiar with any Montessori schools and Montessori methods?
No, I'm definitely familiar with the Montessori schools. And yeah, they do have the flexibility to do things differently. And here, where I'm from in Toronto, we're seeing a lot of varying sort of experiential schools where the kids are mostly outside for the day, and they're experiencing and they're interacting, and they're very in charge of their learning. And we are seeing the implementation of more hands-on social learning, as we're calling it. And it is happening. But when we look at the sort of the beast, if you will, of school boards, that's where we really need to start making the changes, because we can't rely on, Montessori's, and we can't rely on these small experiential schools to dominate and take over, because I don't think that's realistic. So getting this information into, teachers who are, when we think about it, I think about this as my profession. We're in the business of changing brains every day through learning. That's what we do.
Wow. When you said that, we totally didn't prepare for this, but what I'm thinking about is athletics and how all the coaches, like, they can put it together, like, we're in the business of changing bodies and making faster athletes or stronger athletes or better teams, but nobody really pays attention to the brain, right? The brain drives the athlete.
Yeah, it's really, one of the things that, I tend to want to highlight with people is we really do grossly underutilize, we dangerously undervalue the power of our 3 pounds of mass. We really do. And I think this little piece of education and showing people, just scratching the surface without it being overly intimidating, is we are really limitless when it comes to our brains. It's a matter of, do you want to figure out what that actually could feel like? Do you want to experiment with what that looks like? And a really great way to do that is through learning.
So speaking of learning and school, in school, when your mind starts to wander, or at work, right? That happens to us every day. And your mind starts to wander and someone tells you to concentrate. This actually came up in a meeting a couple of weeks ago. And they pointed out, like, you're not really taught how to concentrate. They said, hey, stay on task. You need to concentrate. You need to finish. You need to do what you're doing. And that just drives more stress, right? Why do you think we're not taught how to concentrate or taught how to learn? It seems like this is after school.
I think it's really a matter of, we fell into very structured behavioral patterns when it came to learning. And, I definitely know that through the methodologies, you know, I think that almost all of us had probably sat through a spelling test at one point where the teacher called out a word and we were sitting there trying to spell it. But it's the methodologies that didn't change.
What about a transformational story? Do you have a story maybe that you witnessed or somebody around you or did you witness an amazing transformation when it comes to this neuro learning and the new method?
Yeah. I mean, quite honestly, I think I'm my best story. And the reason why I sort of put myself at the forefront of this is that, you know, I had been in learning and development for close to 16 years before I had sort of discovered the correlation between neurosciences and learning, which to me, even as I say this right now, is how did I not consider the brain? How did I not think about the brain? But when I decided to stop everything that I was doing to go back and get my designations and certifications in neuroscience, I didn't have any experience with the sciences. You know, we were speaking previously and I told you, I gave up math in grade 11. Science was not anywhere in my future. And when I was revisiting this years later as an adult learner with nothing to hold on to, my brain had no experience with this. It really was learning at its fundamental core. And I went through those challenges of, you know, to your point is how do I stay focused? When this is incredibly difficult, I'm trying to say words where I've never seen them before. And I'm literally sitting on my couch sounding out words like, you know, like a child learning to read again. And then we were getting into very complex theory because, you know, the brain is definitely not a simple topic to learn. So going through my own learning journey and learning about how I was learning, the functions of my brain that were taking place, but then tapping into the methodologies of it, I really did become my own best case study. And in the end, it's made me a more efficient learner, which then I translate into the practices that I work with my clients, which have been phenomenal. Because now knowing this, as an instructional designer of learning and a facilitator, having the knowledge of what's going on in the brain, coupled with the research on the new methodologies, has just brought my ability to design learning to enhance the learner's experience, but also for them to be able to enjoy but actually recall, because that's what learning is, what we're aiming for. It's not about the stickiness. We don't want something to stick necessarily. We want to get it into your long-term memory so that you can recall it when you can use it. Because if you can't recall it, it means you haven't learned it.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, if you can't recall it or apply it, right, it's you don't have that knowledge. So you said something you know, about your personal story, and obviously you have things that you can, you know, pass on. You know, we all can become better students. And then you said work with your clients. So I'm really curious of when people call you, like what realization have they come to? Are there any common denominators? Sorry, that is pre 11th grade math. Okay. So you should know. but are there any common denominators of people that call you? Like, what did they realize? How did they get to that realization? And how long did it take them? So, you know, I'm curious, like, when people are just fed up, right? How did they get there?
When it comes to business and organizational learning, when people get to the point of being fed up, it's really the driving force is the same across the board, which is they're not seeing the results. So they're recognizing the fact that year after year, they've been investing in learning, they've been investing in a training budget. And sometimes, you know, they'll be doing the same training over and over and over again, but they're not getting the results that they want. So that's really the driving force, which is if you have very specific measurables and objectives and goals that you're trying to reach within your operations and whatever you're doing as far as trying to get the learning translated into results isn't working, then it makes logical sense to look for, you know, for different ways of doing it. So when I get brought on to do a new client project, usually it's at that point, which is, you know, and there's a lot of other factors to this as well. I think, you know, from an employee engagement standpoint, what's the best way to engage not an employee per se, but a human? It's to keep their brain engaged. And learning can become very addictive and it can be very pleasurable because it does release endorphins and serotonin and dopamine, all these wonderful cocktails that we put together. But when the clients come to me, it's looking for the new strategies because the old ones aren't working. And I'm really hoping that more organizations start to sort of understand that you might have a wonderful learning and development team, just like I did when, you know, when I was in corporate, but most of us don't take the time to upgrade ourselves.
Interesting. What are some things that we could do to upgrade ourselves? What's an easy thing, maybe a new habit to develop? So when we're at our new, when we're at the next dopamine, serotonin cocktail party, we can pass on that tip. Any new habit that we can do to kind of stimulate learning?
It's definitely, you know, it's always, I always say, you know, I think a couple of years ago and for a little while, there was that, that chase your passion sort of message. And I think passion is great, but I'm passionate about a lot of things. Like I'm passionate about my pillow. So it doesn't fuel, you know, my desire to learn more. But my big message to everyone is you chase your curiosities. You figure out what it is that you're curious about, and that will keep driving your learning because, you know, similar to my rabbit hole, which is now the brain, I'm so curious all the time that I'm motivated. I have the desire to want to go and keep exploring and keep doing. Now, that being said, you know, I have my days as well. Yesterday was one of them where my brain was just not interested in focusing on anything. So what do we do in those times? Well, we give it very small, achievable goals. And I think one thing that I would definitely encourage people to understand is that we do have limited capacity when it comes to how much we can take in certain times of the day as well. You know, are you trying to learn at the very end of a long work day? Well, think about it. Your brain has been processing your entire day. So it's tired. So are you going to, you know, try to learn something at a time that might not be that wonderful for your brain when it's, you know, very extraneous? Probably not the best time to passively take something in, listening to a podcast, you know, watching a webinar, something like that. That's a little bit easier. But when you're looking to do some focused attention, you really want to sort of limit yourself to about 20 minutes at a time of that focused attention before you want to move over. So I'd say to everybody, take it easy on yourselves. You know, we taught ourselves really well, most of us, to cram for hours for a test in high school or university. You know, do our homework in the hallway right before we went into class. But it's just not the way that it should be, and there's definitely better ways to do it. So I'd say give yourself a grain of salt.
All right. So 20 minutes in the morning. Don't work too hard at night, basically, right? And that's kind of what I do. Like at night, yeah, it's webinars, it's videos, it's podcast, or just kind of like research, right? But the morning time is definitely my peak time. I have to do all my hard work in the morning because like I'm refreshed, right? And I've had a walk and plenty of coffee and I'm ready to roll.
Yeah, I think the cool thing about when we're talking about learning, we're talking about the consolidation of learning, and it's no wonder that you feel that way in the morning. So we, you know, I'll just touch for a moment here on sleep and the importance of sleep. Now, we know that sleep is important just for, you know, our everyday sanity. But when it comes to learning is while we're asleep, there's a few things that are happening. So it's when learning is being consolidated, which means we're forgetting and remembering at the same time. And it's the only time that this happens. And then on top of that is because your brain cells are more relaxed while you're sleeping, what happens is the toxins that have built up throughout the day, they're now able to be released and they get released through the central nervous system. So when you don't get enough sleep and those toxins are still sort of floating around in your brain and you wake up and you feel a little bit fuzzy and hazy, your cognitive attention is not going to be as strong as it could be. So I can't stress enough, obviously, the importance of sleep to your cognitive functions, but also the understanding that it's really when that learning is being consolidated. So, you know, to set an expectation to throw people into a learning session or a training session for 4 to 8 hours in a day and, you know, ask them, okay, so can you go ahead and implement or recall this the next day? It's not necessarily realistic.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. Well, that's really cool. You said something about sleep and the toxins release. Is that how the CTE, the head trauma, works, right? I think some of the proteins don't get released when you're sleeping and you develop the CTE, like from playing football and things. Am I making that up?
I honestly don't know. I haven't seen any research on that. When it comes to the toxins in our brains, you can pretty much like equate them. So through the rest of our body, our sort of toxins are being released through our lymphatic system, but the brain doesn't have that. So the brain came up with its own methodology to clear the toxins. And the only time that it can really happen is when those cells are at rest and when we're asleep, because it sort of shrinks down a little bit. So it allows the flow of blood to clear through. And there's been some amazing, I've watched some amazing lectures where you can actually visually see this, and it's phenomenal.
No, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I definitely want to take a look at that. So Lauren, you've offered us some great, you know, tips and inspirations on what we need to do with our brains. What do you listen to or read or pay attention to remain inspired? Like where does your curiosity take you?
Oh man, I'm a bona fide. I've coined myself a neuro nerd. So typically, what I'm reading, I'm in the midst of doing a lot of research for a book that I'll be writing, and so I'm very much into looking at the professors and the researchers who are doing all the studies on learning methodologies and functionalities of our cognitive processes. So most recently, I've been very into a gentleman by the name of Eric Kandel. And Eric is an older gentleman. He won the Nobel Prize in 2000 for his work in neuroscience. And it's just so relevant and still so fascinating to this day. For a general read, there's this one author who's also a neuroscientist. His name is V.S. Ramachandran, and he wrote a really, really interesting book called Phantoms in the Brain. And if you ever really want to understand just how powerful your brain is, I would totally recommend reading this book, because it's fascinating. Number one, it's not too scientific, but it really goes into case studies with people and what happens when there's damage and what we believe and what's not necessarily there.
All right, that's cool. Yeah, I'll definitely take a look at that. If you didn't have any responsibilities at home or work next week, what would you do with your time?
I've been eyeing up a few yoga retreats. I could really use a little mind-body rejuvenation. So yeah. I'd probably be in Costa Rica on a yoga retreat.
I mean, that sounds pretty good, especially winter time. You know, it's a lot nicer down there than it is in Toronto.
Absolutely. I've been calling it, we had Snowmageddon the other week. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it was pretty bad. If Lauren, if somebody had a question for you based on what they heard today, or they wanted to reach out with a suggestion on stellar yoga retreats, what's the best way to contact you?
I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. They can also find some of my materials there, and that's just Lauren Waldman, Learning Pirate. Anything Learning Pirate will pretty much come up. Myself, Instagram as well at Learning Pirate. And of course, if anyone really did want to reach out for more specifics, they could definitely feel free to email me through the website, which is www.learningpirate.com.
Awesome. Awesome. So yeah, hopefully you get some questions based on all that have listened. So, last question I always ask, any closing thoughts you have for all the listeners today?
Absolutely. Is we think we know that we're learning, but we don't really know that we're learning. And I think when we sort of look at learning sometimes as an illusion, it sort of opens our eyes to discover more. So question everything that you think you know.
Awesome. Awesome. Love it. So thank you so much, Lauren, for investing your time with my listeners today. I really appreciate it. And thank for all your suggestions.
My pleasure. And, thanks to all the listeners for allowing me to tickle their brains.
Hi, and thanks for listening. This is Scott King, where it is my goal to inform you how smart marketers build their brands and grow their businesses. Please subscribe to the podcast series at thescottking.com or follow me on Twitter at @thescottking to grab the next link. If you like what you heard today, please go to iTunes and write a review. Always appreciate that. Thanks, and be sure and visit again.